Welcome everyone to the regular meeting of the SCV Water Board of Directors for March 16th, 2021. And with that, I would like to move to item two for the Pledge of Allegiance. And I would ask Director Bronstein, as we all stay seated and mute ourselves, ask Director Bronstein to recite the pledge. Please, Director Bronstein.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Director Bronstein. We move to announcements for tonight's meeting that we normally have. This meeting is being conducted in accordance with authorizations and requirements contained in Governor Newsom's Executive Order N-29-20, signed on March 17, 2020. Board and staff, please mute all of your devices until you are ready to speak to avoid feedback, echoing, and background noise. Make sure you unmute when speaking and remute when you are done speaking. All board members, please turn on your cameras during the meeting. Please, staff, turn on your cameras when you are speaking and turn them off when you are done speaking. Board members will be advised to use the raise hand feature in Zoom when action and discussion items are presented. I will call on each of you when it is your turn to speak. The public may comment on items covered on the agenda during item three, or may do so at the time each item is considered and will be limited to 3 minutes per comment. To participate in public comments from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. Please do not turn on your cameras unless you are speaking during public comment, and then please turn them off when you have completed your comment. To participate in public comment via the telephone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. When you are finished with your public comment, staff will remute you. Please be familiar with the last two digits of your phone number. We will use the following procedure for approving items and taking public comment. I will introduce each item, each agenda item. I will ask for questions from the board members. Please raise your hand, by the way. I will then call for public comments. The board may then ask additional questions and discuss further if necessary, including public comments if desired. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for roll call votes. Board secretary will be doing the attendance by roll call, and each item being considered will be taken by roll call. PowerPoints at tonight's meeting can be viewed on the SCV Water website. I will now pass the meeting to the board secretary for the roll call for attendance. Please, Madam Secretary, proceed.
As I call your name, please say present. Director Ford, are you present?
Present.
Director Atkins, are you present?
Present. Present.
Thank you. Director Cooper, are you present?
Present.
Director Bronstein, are you present?
Present.
Director Plambeck, are you present?
Yes, I'm here.
Director Ozohowski, are you present? Thank you. Director Armitage, are you present?
Present.
Director Colley, are you present?
I'm here.
Thank you. Director Kelly, are you present? Director Kelly? I'll come back to Director Kelly. Vice President Gladbeck, are you present?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, are you present?
Present.
President Martin, are you present?
I am present.
Let's try Director Kelly one more time. Director Kelly, are you present? Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, April. We move on to item three, public comments. I'd like to remind the public that those on the landline to hit *9 to raise their hand and *6 to unmute. For those on a device such as a computer, smartphone, or other item, to raise your hand. I would like to make a couple of additional announcements about public comment. Item 3 public comment is for public comments on items on the agenda or items not on the agenda. If you'd like to make public comment on items on the agenda, you can do so now or when the item comes up. However, when we get to the item on the agenda, any public comment should be in relation to the item itself. If it is not in relation to the item itself, I may ask you to stop. So with that, I will ask, are there any members of the public who would like to make public comment at this time? Let me see my list. I see 2 hands up. I see Chase Hurley. If you'd like to proceed with your public comment, please proceed.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, well, thank you. My name is Chase Hurley, and I'm representing Set and Pistachio out of Tarabella, California. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak tonight in front of you. Around 1.5 years ago, I did drive south and speak in front of a Devil's Den Water District Board meeting in your facility. And Set and Pistachio owns land adjacent to the western boundary of Devil's Den Water District, in which your agency now owns quite a bit of land and has some resource things that you're looking at for property within Devil's Den. Set and Pistachio has been working with your staff over the last 1.5 years on ideas and thoughts that we have about the ability to build some infrastructure to be able to hopefully here in the future convey supplemental surface water supplies to their property. It's a pistachio orchard, probably around 10 to 12 years old. Devil's Den Water District has an existing turnout, as you folks know, on the state canal. And we're a couple miles west of the facility. I've been working with your staff, and I know you've been working on a resource plan for the Devil's Den Water District lands that you own within the boundary. And Seton would just like to stay in front of you and hopefully be a partner as you determine what you may want to do with those lands within the boundary. We think there's a great opportunity to have a public and private partnership with things such as infrastructure pipelines, perhaps solar projects, et cetera. But our main vision right now is to see if we can work on fee title or easements with your agency to potentially get a pipeline tied into the canal. We would have to work with Devil's Den and your agency to put all this together, but we're willing to spend the capital and do whatever is necessary to try to put some infrastructure together that'll help us get some supplemental surface water supply. We're a pretty diversified operation and have the ability to get some water out there if we just had some facilities. So just wanted to stay in front of you. I have been working with Rick with your agency, and I just want to let you know that we're going to continue to go down that path as long as you guys are sort of willing to stay engaged and continue to talk with us. So I just thought I'd drop in tonight and thank you for allowing your staff to continue to work with us.
Thank you, Mr. Hurley, for your public comment, and thank you for introducing yourself. With that, I'd ask Cam Lotemeyer to proceed with your public comment, please.
Ms. Noltmar hit *6 to speak.
Oh, I'm sorry. I started. I was looking through the county files, and I came across an agenda item for a Belarus, and then the Valencia came up. So, of course, I was interested. And this was on a hearing for March 9th. I haven't gotten back in there to see if it was approved, but it was for the Valencia project, and it was for $70 million. And we all know what a Belarus is. What's interesting about this one is that after you read through it, and I only have a few minutes, so I'll just tell you hoping you understand that as I read through it to find out who was actually going to pay for this, it really should be the ones that are on the property approve this. But they said, well, they're the property owners, and so they were going to handle this and approve this. And I find that a little strange and unusual, but that's what they were doing and probably did, is they said that we will just carry it, and then as soon as it is formally, you know, they have everything built and everything, and the people approve it, they will get paid back the $70 million. I find that questionable. And I wanted you to be made aware of that, that there might be a challenge being made to how they are doing this. And they did it very quietly. I tried to bring it up at one of the subcommittee meetings, and I didn't get any kind of reply. So I wanted the full board to be aware of this and that the public is aware of this, how it was done. Because a lot of things are buried in the county agendas. And that wasn't what I was looking for, but that's what I found. And I wanted you to be aware of it and that there would possibly be a challenge to that going through that way and having them just control it and approving it and then years later put it onto all the homeowners in that new Valencia project. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer, for your comment. Steve Petzl, please proceed with your public comment.
Thank you. I'm calling you tonight again regarding the ability of the public to put items on the agenda. I sent you a copy of your own board policies about putting on an item on the agenda. And I think at a minimum that should be placed under the transparency pull down on your homepage. The item that you do have on there is very outdated at this time. That's the resolution SCV-46, which I believe expired. So it's not as easy as having a director ask the president to have an item put on the agenda, because the president can decide not to put it on the agenda. But the president should bring it before the board if he decides not to, according to the policy. That's number one that I sent you in your agenda packet. I think it's important to be transparent with the public about what can be done to put items that are of concern to them that are within the jurisdiction of SCV Water on the agenda. So again, I'm asking you to at least put this item from your own board policy under transparency so that the public can be aware of what it takes to put an item on a future agenda. And I would ask you in the future to modify that so that it wouldn't be just to the jurisdiction of the president of the board. And if the president doesn't want to put an item on the agenda, it seems to me that it's incumbent on him, per your own board policy, to bring it before the other directors as an action item on an agenda to have them decide. Now, I find that problematic because then it would require a majority of the directors to allow for something to be put on the agenda. Again, I refer back to the item that you had previously on your website, which allowed the general manager to consider whether to put something on the agenda. And then if he decided that that was not appropriate, to have a director place it on the agenda. So we need clarification. We need clarity as to what it takes for a member of the public to put an item on your agenda. I think it's important for your board to be transparent and allow the public to have input beyond just items not on the agenda, because items on the agenda does not allow adequate input from the other directors as to the comments made. I thank you very much, and I wish you a pleasant evening.
Thank you, Mr. Petzl, for your comment, and it will be taken under consideration. Are there any other members of the public who would like to comment? I don't see any hands raised on my screen. So with that, we will move to item four, approval of the agenda. Please note, members of the board, that we are pulling item 5.3 as a separate item for discussion because the staff report was amended and the item was revised and sent out. And so it will be considered as a separate item. So I would entertain a motion for approval of the agenda.
Approve the agenda, Mortensen.
Motion by Vice President Mortensen.
Second by Cooper.
Second by Director Cooper. Do we have any questions from the board before I ask for public comment? No questions. So are there any members of the public who would like to comment before we take the vote? I do not see any public comments. So with that, Madam Secretary, will you call the roll for the vote?
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thank you. Director Plambeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Olsohosky, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
The agenda is approved with that change. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now move to item five, approval of the consent calendar, excluding item 5.3. I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar, excluding item 5.3.
So moved, Lynn Plambeck.
Motion by Director Plambeck. Vice President Gladbeck seconds. Are there any questions before I ask for the public comment? Hearing none, are there any members of the public who want to comment before we take the vote? I see one hand raised, Cam Moltemeyer. Please proceed with your public comment.
Yes, I just have a comment about, I'm sorry, it's a small desk here. There is a, on 5.2, it's about the wells, the center wells, PFAS, groundwater treatment plant. I know you're probably aware that the treatment plant by the Little League fields there has been shut down. And that's because they were dumping water into the river. And I don't know, do you know what they're going to do about the water situation with the Valley Center PFAS? Where is the groundwater, or their treatment water, going to, how it's going to be handled? Because it'll be the same situation there if they try to put it into the river or a creek or anything like that. Just a word of caution that you're sure how it's going to be handled in relation to that complete shutdown of that system. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment, Ms. Moltemeyer. Are there any other public comments on item five consent calendar? I do not see any. We have a motion and a second for the approval of consent calendar, excluding item 5.3. Madam Secretary, please call the vote.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Olsohosky, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote? Director Atkins?
Yes.
Thank you. Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Plambeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
The consent calendar is approved. That includes resolution numbers SCV-202 and SCV-203, and this does exclude item 5.3. Thank you.
Thank you very much, April. With that, we can move to item 5.3, approval.
President Martin, it looks like the general manager has a question.
Mr. Stone, please.
Comment on the last public comment. The in-wells that treat PFAS at the Little League fields have not been shut down. They're operating. I'm not sure what the source of the comment was, but just wanted to make sure that was put into the record as a correction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stone, for the clarification. With that, we can move to item 5.3, approve a change order to the contract for Newhall Tank 2 interior recoat and repair. And we are honored again tonight to have Mike Alford do the presentation on that item, unless Mr. Stone has a few words before Mr. Alford begins.
All right, not hearing any. I would like to thank the illustrious Director Colley for bringing the error in the agenda item. The summary was incorrectly cut and paste into the item. So that was the issue. And I apologize that we had to pull it from the calendar because it went through the engineering from the consent calendar because it went through the engineering and operations committee and was referred to the consent calendar. But because of that error, I'm sitting before you talking. It's a change order on an item that was previously approved by the board of directors for the recoat and repair of tank 2 in our Newhall zone 2. And the board previously approved $261,000 for the recoat and repairs. During the idle time of the tank, when the water was taken out, we had some extremely high winds. It's projected that by the engineering firm Cannon, who did the design work for the repairs, as well as the contractor doing the repairs and the coating contractor, that the high winds shifted the plates on the roof, causing some additional rotation of the rafters, resulting in this change order of $40,500. Since it's above the 4% and $20,000 threshold of the general manager's approval, we had to bring it before the E&O committee as well as now the board. And that pretty much concludes my report unless anybody has specific questions regarding the project.
Well, we do have the illustrious Director Colley has his hand raised. So Director Colley.
Yeah, I apologize for my actions that caused us to have a presentation by Mike Alvord. I would move the staff recommended action that should have been able to stay on this consent calendar, unfortunately.
All right. We have a couple of questions, but Director Bronstein, would you ask your question?
I wanted to know who was responsible for emptying the tank and like that whole process. Is that something that they decide to do at some point, or do we do it beforehand to prepare it for them?
The latter, yes. We lower the tank level and drain it for the contractor. Then the contractor moves on site and begins their work. Yeah.
Okay. It makes sense to me that I understand how this physically happened. It makes sense. I would just like that in the future, if we can rely a little bit more on, you know, the weather to know that we are going to have high winds and make sure that we don't do these things that seem, it's not a lot of money, I get it, in the scheme of things, but it comes out of our ratepayers' pockets. So I'd like us to be a little bit more careful with it in the future.
Thank you. Noted.
Vice President Mortensen, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mike. I appreciate you joining us today. Do we have insurance that covers acts of God, like wind damage? It would seem like that might be an insured risk that maybe we could recover for our ratepayers?
That is a great question. I don't know if something like that would be covered, but I'll check with Rochelle Patterson and see if we have any sort of coverage through insurance.
All right. Any other questions from the board before I ask for public comment? Director Armitage. Oh, yes, you did have your hand up. Yes. Yeah, two hands up.
Thank you. So I was going to ask the same question about insurance. So thank you, Vice President Mortensen, for asking that. And then also I was going to ask about lessons learned, as Director Bronstein asked if I'm sure there are lessons learned from there that we can carry forward to avoid this happening again, because it seems like wind events are going to either continue at the same pace or probably even get worse going into the future. So and then the last question I have is, it seems that we're still under project cost for this, correct? Even with this additional cost, I think it shows that we have total project cost for just over $300,000, and it was budgeted for $500,000. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. And in terms of lessons learned, so we've never experienced anything like this before. One of the things that's extremely difficult when you bid a project like this that requires not only coding's easy. It's a pretty straightforward process, pretty straightforward bid. But when there is some repairs that are required, you're relying on the dive report prior to when the tank is taken out of service. So you have a diver that goes in, they do the assessment of the coating, they take pictures, they do the assessment of the rafters and any other potential issues. And we also hired Cannon Engineering to provide their expertise to help us with determining exactly what to put in the RFP. And so they're looking in it from the in, they're opening the hatch and looking from the inside, but they're not going in and the tank's not drained. So you really don't know the extent of all of the work. That's why the budget was what we had originally budgeted for at the beginning of the fiscal year. So in terms of what's happened is we think, everybody's speculating, that those winds caused the rafters to shift slightly more. And so not only do they have to now add additional bracing and straightening, they have to recoat some areas that weren't exposed before, at least what they originally determined. So in terms of lessons learned, you know, I don't know that anybody could have predicted we were going to get, I think it was upwards of 70 mile an hour winds. But we can, obviously we will look at that. We do look at times of the year when we take the tanks out of service. We don't want to take them out of service in the middle of summer because we need the storage for demands. We don't want to take them out of service in fire season. So there are a lot of variables that we take into consideration when we do projects like this.
Mike, just one other thought too. About how long does the tank need to be pulled down to an empty level for this type of activity to occur? Because I think that probably far exceeds the long range forecasting capability.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great, Matt. Thanks for that. That is true. Because once you drain it and you have to do the coating, and this one also had cold tar, which requires additional work to remove prior to coating, it would be out of service for potentially up to a month to 2 months. So I don't know that we would have predicted that. That's a great point. And I would like to apologize to Vice President Mortensen for not being available to answer all his questions from last night. But I think Rochelle handled it for me.
All right, Director Bronstein, you had a question.
Just a quick thing where does the water go when we drain it?
It goes into the system. So we lower it to a level that, to the drain level. And then there's about a couple feet left. And then we discharge that under our NPDES permits into the nearest storm drain.
Okay, thank you. I was just, as we're talking about this, I'm like, it's water, where is it coming?
Yeah, all the water's being used in the system until it goes below that pipeline level, which is a couple feet off the ground.
Thank you.
Vice President Gladbach, you had your hand raised.
Yeah, Mike, what difference does it make whether the tank is full or not with the wind damage?
Well, that's a great question, Director Vice President Gladbeck. we think, the engineer thinks, Canon engineer, and the contractor believes that the force of the winds with a tank that didn't have that water pressure in it caused the roof to buckle slightly more. I know the roofs do buckle when you walk on them, even when they're full, but that was just their estimation. It could be as simple as they didn't notice it when the dive happened and when the engineer did their initial assessment. It could be that that happened too, but they both wrote a report stating that they believed it was the winds that caused it.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions before I ask for public comment? Seeing none, I will. Is there any member of the public who would like to comment on this item before we call for a second and then a vote? So I see no hands raised. We do have a motion on this item from Director Colley. I would ask for a second.
Second, Armitage.
Second by Director Armitage. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Madam Secretary, will you call the vote?
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Olsopowski, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
This item passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. All right, we can move on to item 6, action items for approval. And tonight we have one item under item 6, which is item 6.1, approve a resolution awarding a construction contract to Pacific Tank and Construction Incorporated with a condition that project complies with the adopted supplemental mitigated negative declaration and mitigation monitoring and reporting program, and to approve general manager's change order authority to be increased to 10% of the original contract amount. And secondly, a work authorization to Canem Corporation for construction management and inspection services. And third, a work authorization to Kennedy Jenks for engineering construction support services. And fourth, a work order for Geolabs Westlake Village for geotechnical observation and testing services for the Vista Canyon Phase 2B recycled water tank project. We have our illustrious Orlando Marino back with us tonight for a presentation, but I would ask Mr. Stone, do you have any comments before Orlando proceeds?
No, please proceed.
Mr. Marino, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Thank you, President Martin. Good evening. My name is Orlando Moreno. I'm the project manager on the Vista Canyon Phase 2B recycled water tank project. April, if you mind, would you please go to the next slide, please? Thank you. All right, so a real quick overview of the recycled Phase 2B project system. It will provide recycled water to the Vista Canyon and Fair Oaks Ranch communities on the east side of our Santa Clarita Valley. The system consists of pumps at the Vista Canyon Water Factory, a network of distribution pipelines, and two recycled water tanks. The pipelines are currently under construction and set to be completed by this summer. The recycled water tanks themselves are the last piece that we need to really activate the system here. Next slide, please. So the tank project itself consists of constructing 2 half-million-gallon steel tanks, appurtenances, and site improvements on a dirt pad adjacent to our existing Cherry Willow potable water tank facility. The tanks are approximately 30 feet in height and 50 feet in diameter. The site will require over excavation and earth fill to provide a certified compacted pad. And then we will also be constructing a 15-foot high berm along the north side of the site to screen the tanks from the residents down below. The slopes, the surrounding slopes will be landscaped with native drought tolerant plants. And I believe Director Planbeck, we submitted the plant selection list to you last week as you requested.
You did, thank you very much. I received it.
A pleasure. And then the project also includes the extension of the 12-inch recycled water pipeline along the access road from Cherry Willow Drive down below up to our tank site. Next slide, please. So staff advertised the tank project for public construction bidding through Planet Bids on January 8th. And we received bids on February 10th from the five contractors shown on this list. The lowest responsible bidder was confirmed to be Pacific Tank and Construction Inc. with a bid amount of $3,906,870, which was within 1.5% of our engineer's estimated cost of $3.96 million. We did receive, unfortunately, a bid protest from Metro Builders claiming that the low bidder did not issue a notary acknowledgement on the bid bonds and the non-collusion affidavit. But as directed by our legal counsel, the bid protest was denied since notary acknowledgement was in fact received for the bid bonds, and it was determined that the notary certificate for the non-collusion affidavit was not required and therefore waived. We also determined that Metro Builders did not meet the minimum project experience requirements and license classification, and therefore they would not be eligible for the project award. A copy of the bid protest denial is included in the board package. Next slide, please. On the consultant side, we're asking that the board authorize a construction management inspection and testing work authorization to Canon Corp for $496,015. We received proposals from three engineering firms for construction management services, and Canon received the highest score in our selection committee. We are also asking to provide a work authorization for geotechnical observation and soil testing at Geolabs Westlake Village for $106,000. Geolabs is the project's geotechnical engineer of record. And also authorizing engineering construction support services to Kennedy Jenks for $126,000. As Kennedy Jenks is the project engineer or the engineer of record on the project here. Next slide, please. On schedule, staff is working diligently to complete the tanks and bring them online by December 31st to meet our project completion obligation to the state and ensure that we receive the full amount of grant funding for the phase 2B pipeline and tank projects. On March 2nd, the Board of Directors adopted the project supplemental M&D and an authorization for the general manager to purchase the tank property, which we're currently in the process of doing. Tonight, with your approval and adoption of the actions before you, we will proceed with construction around middle of April. The contractor is contractually required to complete the project in 210 calendar days. So we expect that completion will be around mid-November of this year. Next slide, please. On budget, approximately $6.9 million has been allocated for the recycled water tank and backbone pipeline construction in our 2021 CIP budget. The total estimated cost for the tank and backbone pipeline will be almost $6.6 million, which includes an allowance for a change order up to 10% of the tank contract value. Since the project must meet a December 31st grant deadline, and there's very limited time to process any change orders through E&O and board approval, we are requesting that the board make an exception to our purchasing policy by increasing the general manager's change order authority from 4% to 10% on this project. Staff will continue to work proactively with our consultants, our contractors, our construction managers, to validate all change orders and make sure that we keep our excellent track record of minimizing the contractor change orders on this one. Of course, the directors of the board will be kept updated on all project progress and all change order requests. I also would like to point out that the liquidated damages are contractually set at $5,000 per day for any contractor delays. I know that Director Cooper had a question related to that in our E&O committee, so I wanted to clarify that. So if the contractor is late up to January 1st, the contractor would be penalized approximately $210,000 minus any rain delays. And we feel that that would cover any loss of funding if that a delay would were to occur. Next slide, please. All right, so in conclusion, we're recommending that the board approve a resolution awarding a construction contract to Pacific Tank and Construction Inc. in the amount of $3,906,870, with the condition that the project complies with the adopted supplemental mitigated negative declaration and MMRP, and to approve the general manager to, and to approve the general manager's change order authority to be increased to 10% of the original contract amount for this project as provided for in the SCV water purchasing policy. Two, to approve a work authorization and canning corporation for construction management, inspection services, material testing in the amount of $496,015. Three, to approve a work authorization to Kennedy Jenks for engineering construction support services in the amount of $126,000. And four, approve a work authorization to Geolabs Westlake Village for geotechnical observation and testing services in the amount of $106,000. That concludes my presentation, and I will open it up to questions. President Martin, I believe you are on mute.
Yes, I am. Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation, Orlando. It's great to have you with us again tonight. I see one hand raised from Director Colley. Go ahead, Director Colley.
Yeah, I just a quick question. The conditions that of compliance with the negative deck and the monitoring, is that just a belt and suspenders approach? Given our experiences in the West Ridge project,
Director Colley, that's correct. It's just a because we have to tie the supplemental mitigated negative declaration, which was approved a couple of weeks ago. It's got to be tied to a construction approval or an approval to award a construction project. That's why we had to include that as advised by our legal counsel.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Any other questions from the board before I ask for public comment? Director Armitage, two hands raised.
Yeah, I'm not sure you're seeing my digital hand there. Okay, so two questions. I have one larger, bigger picture kind of general contracting question and then one more specific one. My big picture question is, so, you know, we're learning that, or I'm learning that when big projects, construction-related projects like this are taken on, the work obviously is contracted out because this falls outside of the scope of the day-to-day distribution and treatment work done by staff, correct? SCV Water Agency staff. So, you know, this work gets contracted out to multiple contractors. Can you just briefly, you don't have to go into super detail, can you briefly explain why it takes multiple contractors for one construction project and kind of how they differ but complement each other? And then my specific question was, did requests for proposals also go out for the engineering, construction, and support services work that was ultimately awarded to Kennedy Jenks, and also for the geotechnical work that went to Geolabs?
Sure. Director Armitage, I'll answer the last question. No, we went directly to the project engineer of record and the geotechnical engineer of record on this one. Because this is a big grading job, there's a significant amount of earthwork that's going to happen. We felt that going with the geotechnical engineer that's on the project that is extremely familiar with the site was probably the safest bet, especially considering that there's a landslide and some bad soils out there. And then for the engineering support, we decided to go with Kennedy Jenks because they are the engineers who designed the tanks. And so we want to make sure that they're able to respond to any contractor questions or any requests for information during construction so that those issues can be handled quickly. To answer your first question, I believe your question was related to the contractor and the subcontractors, correct? So we went out, and I'll back up a little bit. We bid this project for public bidding to basically X number of contractors in the public. And then we received five. At the end of the day, we received five bids. And then essentially we have to go with the lowest bidder. And that lowest bidder, what we do is we go through and make sure that any subcontractors that they have also meet certain requirements as far as qualifications. And so for this particular, in this particular case, we were careful about making sure that they have the correct earthwork contract subcontractor, that they have the right piping contractor. So they have various subcontractors that they bring in as part of their team, if you will.
Thank you.
Director Armitage, I think we talked about this before. All but the only contract that requires a hard bid, competitive public contract bid is the construction contract. The other three awards are all qualification-based selections. Is that correct, Orlando?
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank all you right. for the any clarification.
Any other questions from the board? I don't see any. Let me ask for public comment on this item. Are there any members of the public who would like to comment on item 6.1? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion for approval of item 6.1.
A motion, President Martin.
Director Ozahowski makes the motion. Do we have a second?
Second, Mortensen.
Second by Vice President Mortensen. Madam Secretary, will you call the roll?
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thank you. Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes, I'm not happy about the 10% overage, but Mr. Marino is going to make sure it doesn't happen.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote? Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ozahowski, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cawley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thank you. This item passes. That includes resolution number SCB-204.
All right. Thank you. We move on to item 7, presentation. Item 7.1, status of water supplies. Our presenter tonight is Sarah Fleury. Unless the manager, General Manager Stone, would like to make any introductory remarks, I would turn it over to Sarah for her presentation.
That's fine. Yes, please proceed. Sorry, it's always hard to find that button.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Sarah Fleury, and I will be doing a continuation of a presentation I gave in January, I believe, updating you on the status of our water supplies. Next slide. So we're going to go through where we currently are with the drought classification in California, look at where we're at with snowpack, Santa Clarita precipitation, go through some weather forecasts, and then look at our operating plan. And this is a photo I thought was pretty cool of an atmospheric river hitting the coast of California. One of few this year, but it did happen at least once. Next slide, please. So we're going to start with our drought classification. On the left-hand side, I've got where we were as far as drought classifications at the start of our water year in October. And then on the right-hand side, it shows current conditions. And so at the beginning of the water year, about 85% of the state had some level of drought classification. And you can see it was definitely more severe up in the northern area. Currently, we have about 99% of the state has some sort of drought classification, and 60% of the state is experiencing severe to exceptional drought. So that's the D2 to to D4. And you can see that it's kind of moving in on the eastern, central, southern area of the state. And the Four Corners area actually is getting hit really hard with a pretty severe drought. So that's bleeding into the east side of our state. Next slide, please. So I saw an interesting article out of the Bay Area recently noting some changes in snowpack trends over the last decade that I thought I would share with you. You could see in this chart from 2002 to 2011, about 60% of the time, the Sierra snowpack was at 100% or better, which was a pretty good trend. In the next slide. And then the article went into the last 10 years, and unfortunately it wasn't similar results. So basically over the last 10 years, there's only been 2 years that we've reached 100% snowpack or better. And so the past decade, we have experienced some of the warmest weather over the Sierra since the record started in 1895. And basically what they were saying was that from 2014 through 2017 and 2020, they were seeing the warmest temperatures on record. So unfortunately, not a very good trend, and warmer temperatures do lead to warmer storms, which bring less snow, as you can see in this graph. Next slide, please. So this is a graph of our current regional snowpack from the automated snow sensors. The state is broken up into three sections here. You've got the Northern Sierra, Central, and Southern Sierra. There's two percentages shown for each section. The left-hand side is the percent of our April 1st average. And then the right-hand side is the percent of normal for this date. And overall, statewide, we're at about 60% of normal for this time of year and 57% of where we should be by April 1st. So there has been some snowstorms going through the state since the last time I've talked to you. Unfortunately, it's kind of been strange because there's not been as much precipitation with the snow. So what's happening is that the stream flows are still trending really low, and forecasts for the water year type is really looking at becoming a dry and critical year, even though we've had some snow. So it's not been an incredibly great year. Next slide, please. So this is a picture of the state and a bunch of current reservoir conditions. You've got, excuse me, you've got a red line on each reservoir, which indicates the historical average. And at the bottom of each reservoir, you've got a blue percentage, which is the percent of capacity for the reservoir. And then the red percentage is percentage of historical average. And basically the key things to note on this table are the two key reservoirs up north. You've got Lake Shasta and Lake Oroville. And Oroville specifically for the State Water Project is very important. And it's extremely low this year. It's actually trending quite similarly to 2014 at the beginning of our last drought period. So I just wanted to point that out. We're hoping that the snow will bring that up a little bit. Next slide, please. So next we're gonna look at where we're at as far as Santa Clarita precipitation for this water year. What I'm showing here is a monthly total precipitation in the blue bars, and then the yellow lines above each month represent where we should be on average each month. And so you can see all of the blue bars are quite below that yellow line. Total precipitation to date, and this is literally as of yesterday, we've had 3.38 inches total this year, which is pretty low. If we don't get any more rain by the end of March, we will be at 21% of our average. So basically by the end of March, our average is about 15 and a half inches by this time. So I wish I could say that there's some storms on the horizon, but I checked this morning and it didn't look so great. Next slide, please. This is another way to look at our historical rainfall just in comparison to some of our other years. The blue line represents our wettest year. The green represents our average year. Red indicates our driest year. Purple was last year. And then yellow is our current year. So as you can see, we're tracking pretty closely with our driest year on record. And that record goes back to 1927. Next slide, please. So next we're going to get into some forecasts. This is an 8 to 14 day forecast, which takes us out to about the end of March. On the left-hand side is our temperature forecast. And you'll see that for the state of California, it's showing some oranges and light orange and dark orange, which indicates a probability of above average temperatures for the next 8 to 14 days. And on the right-hand side, the state of California is showing brown, light brown to dark brown areas, which indicate the probability of below average precipitation for the next 8 to 14 days. Next slide, please. And then this is a 90-day forecast, which basically shows the same thing, probability of above average temperatures for the state of California and the probability of below average precipitation for the next 3 months. Next slide. So with all the doom and gloom that I have to present to you this evening, I'm going to show you our operating plan. So we do have a plan for this type of a water year. And what I'm showing here, sorry, my computer was making a funny noise. What I'm showing here is three different operating plans for 2021. We do an operating plan for a 5% allocation in case the allocation goes down this year. We're currently at a 10% allocation represented in the yellow column, and then a 15% allocation at this point with hopes that it might go up a little. And then we always do, look forward to next year and say, okay, what happens if there's a worst case scenario? And we look at if there's a 5% allocation in 22, what do we need to do this year to prepare for that situation? So what I'm going to do is walk down the column of represented in yellow where we're at now, just so I can kind of go through some of these numbers for you. So the first number we see is 70,000 acre feet. That is the estimated demand for this year. To meet that demand, as we work our way down, we've got groundwater helping our local groundwater. We assume will be about 24,000 acre feet. That would be about 12,000 coming from the alluvial groundwater and 12,000 from the Saugus groundwater supplies. And then we've got 450 acre feet from our recycled water supplies. And so when you take those supplies away from our demand, we end up with about 45,200 acre feet of imported water demand. And so then we go to our imported supplies. We've got our state water project table A at 9,520. And so that's how much we get from the state water project at a 10% allocation. And we've got our Buena Vista Rosedale Rio Bravo firm water purchase of 11,000 acre feet. And so with those two supplies, if you go two columns down, we show a shortfall of about 24,685 acre feet. So when we have a shortfall from our normal imported supplies, that's when we start dipping into our dry year water supplies. And so as we work our way down, we start with our state water project carryover water. And you'll see that I've put 7,000 acre feet from this supply. At the beginning of 2021, we actually have 13,500 acre feet of carryover supply. But as I said, we look forward to the worst case scenario in 2022. And so hoping that we don't have that, but wanting to be prepared, we're planning on using about 7,000 acre feet of carryover this year in hopes of saving the 6,500 additional carryover supplies for that worst case scenario in 2022 if we need it. Moving down the line, we're anticipating anywhere from 10 to 11,000 acre feet being pulled from our Rosedale banking program. We've initiated pulling 5,000 or a maximum amount of 5,000 acre feet from our semi-tropic banking program this year. Nothing from AVEC or United Exchanges is available because the allocation is too low. We do anticipate potentially purchasing about 1,000 acre feet from our Yuba Accord agreement. And we've also initiated participation in the State Water Contractors Dry Year Water Purchase Program in hopes of getting about 1,000 acre feet from that program, depending on the cost. We don't anticipate needing flexible storage unless the allocation goes down to 5%. And so this is kind of our operating plan for this year. And some of the big changes, if it does go down to a 5% allocation, would be that we would pull some extra water from our Rosedale banking program, if possible, and then we might have to utilize our flexible storage account. If we go up, we will be able to drop some of those more expensive programs like Yuba and the Dry Year Water Purchase Program, and then we'd also be able to back off a little bit on our semi-tropic banking program. And then some of the big things that will make a difference for us in 2022, as you can see, the demands are a little higher because next year, you know, the demands kind of increase every year. You'll see that one of the big changes next year is that we'll have more groundwater supplies available from PFAS restoration projects going through, and then some of our Saugus wells getting restored also. And so that makes a huge difference for us as we work our way down the operating plan. So, you know, every year we move towards getting those wells restored, we put ourselves in a better position. Overall, you know, this year probably is going to end up being pretty similar to last year. Last year we had a 20% allocation, but we had a lot less of groundwater available. So kind of evens out in how we operate. Next slide, please. So this is a graph that I put together in the staff report. And what it is monthly, it shows us what supplies we're utilizing to meet demands, what imported supplies, of all of our supplies, what are we using to meet demands? The blue line up top represents our estimated demand each month. And then the bars indicate different water sources. So you can see for the first 2 months, we've been utilizing the blue bar, which is our alluvial, the red bar, which represents our Saugus water. We've also been using Article 56 or our carryover water in green. And then we started pumping from our Rosedale banking program in December actually, and have continued to do so in order to preserve some of our table A and carryover supplies for the peak months when we can't get as much water from our banking program. So there is an advantage to starting pulling from our banking programs early. Next slide. So overall, again, the operations haven't really changed much, I think, from the last time I talked to you in January. We are continuing to recover water from our Rosedale bank until we see an increase in the allocation. With the snow kind of trending the way it is, we're just hoping to stay at the allocation that we are at currently, because the state is pretty behind with overall water supplies. So we're hoping for the best, prepared for the worst, and unsurprised by anything in between. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Sarah. Open it up to questions from the board. There we go. We have a hand up from Director Planback.
Yes, thank you for that very comprehensive presentation. I'm just wondering if we are going to be asking the public to do any water cutbacks this year to reduce demand. I mean, it looked like you didn't have to do that, but I was wondering if we're reaching the 70,000 by asking for cutbacks.
We are preparing our water shortage contingency plan, and Matt has discussed some agencies having to kind of utilize that this year. Right now, we have the supplies that we need to meet the demands, so I do not believe so at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Director Cooper. Question.
Excuse me, I wasn't on. In regards to that same question, Lynn, I think from now on, especially during summertime, we always have to stress conservation. I don't see us requiring people to cut back, but I think our message in conservation has to continue to get out there from now on. That's just kind of the way of life in the water industry now.
Well, absolutely, Mr. Cooper. I was talking about going on opposite days of watering and telling people they couldn't water.
Oh.
And yeah, violations and things like we did when we had that problem the one time, a couple of years, 5 years ago or wherever.
Yeah, the way that the water shortage contingency plan is structured right now, we get through quite a few, the first three levels, we request voluntary conservation actions. So we wouldn't get into those pretty strict requirements until the higher levels.
Any other questions from the board on Sarah's presentation? Director Collins.
Yeah, I just, we probably ought to agendize a discussion before we finalize the water contingency or the plan. Perhaps doing things like asking folks to voluntarily water every other day or something like that, that might, we always want to stress conservation, but this looks like a pretty drastic year that could be setting us up for some pretty long-term problems. And if we were to encourage extra conservation now, it might save us 2 or 3 years in the future.
Good point. Any other questions or comments from the board? Seeing none, I will ask for public comment. Any member of the public who would like to comment on the presentation you just heard? Let me check. Cam Noltemeyer, you have a hand raised. Please proceed.
This is Cam Noltemeyer. Am I approved?
Yes, go ahead. Yes.
Very interesting report. She did an excellent job. The one thing I see missing from this is that we're looking at some very, very big developments going in. The Valencia that you're talking about approving, is that calculated in there too? Say you're going to have another 40,000 new homes built and businesses and that sort of thing. I didn't see that in there. Do you calculate on what your estimated growth of your area is into this? Because it could make a big difference. And I don't want to see them saying you can't water your line or you can't do this or not because you're approving so many homes that require water.
Is that the completion of your comment, Ms. Noltemeyer?
I think it's getting late for you to. Yes, I would like a reply to that.
Well, I would ask Ms. Flory to reply to your comment.
Hi, Cam. Yes, when we look at the demands for each year, we do incorporate all the developments that are coming online for each year. So we keep that in mind and make sure that we include and anticipate all of the developments as they come online. So that has been included in the 2021 demand forecast as well as the 2022 demand forecast.
Thank you, Sarah. Are there any other comments from the public on the presentation? I do not see any further comments. I appreciate your presentation, Sarah. Very useful, very informative. So We can move on to item 8, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. Mr. Stone.
All right, thank you very much, President Martin. I've got a new backdrop here of Vasquez Rocks, where I was able to take a nice hike this weekend in the open air. A lot of people out there, and the vast majority were, as a courtesy, wearing their masks because it was a lot of people, but it was sure nice to be outside. Moving on to the actual report, we'll start off with some good news. FCV Water was notified by the Governor's Office of Emergency Services that we have been allocated a grant of just under $250,000 under their public safety power shutoff. Long title is 2020 Community Power Resiliency Allocation to Special Districts Program. These funds are anticipated to be used to replace and update the emergency generator for backup power at the Earl Schmidt treatment plant. So this will allow us to have a new and reliable generator there that meets EPA and South Coast Air Quality Management District requirements as well. I'm very pleased to get that. And I should note that that was a part of a collective effort through CSDA, California Special Districts Association. And over 200 agencies applied for grants, and we were one of 90 to receive one. So that was a great job by our staff. I remember that being a super short turnaround time on that one. And, you know, we keep putting them under the gun and they keep delivering. So I am very pleased and share my thanks and appreciation to our staff on teaming up for that between operations and our grant folks. So moving on, this is more of a milestone comment. Just about a year ago, on March 20th, the agency transitioned to operations under the Safer at Home order with COVID-19. And we continue to practice those workplace precautions that we have implemented or developed over the ensuing 12 months. It's hard to believe just a few months ago, we were experiencing the highest peak in cases. It was rather jaw-dropping and shocking. And that event, after months of no cases, finally touched a number of members of our staff. Fortunately, and hopefully due to the precautions and some good fortune, we did not have any indication of spread within the workplace from those individuals, and our protocols worked well. One of the reasons we're leaving them in place for now. The news is improving over the last several weeks, as I think everybody knows. Case rates, hospitalizations, deaths continue to decline, as well as the percentage of positive test results in LA County. We're now down under 2%, which is tremendous progress from where we were just a few months ago. As of today, on the vaccine front, I just checked while we were working on another item here tonight, over 3 million shots have been put in arms in LA County. That's not necessarily 3 million people fully vaccinated, since the majority up to this point have been the two-shot regimen. And in the last few days, the average has been about 100,000 shots a day. So that's bumped up over the last week or so from about 50 to 60,000 to about 100,000. I think that's probably a function of wider distribution networks opening up with pharmacies and other providers, and also supply. So it could ebb and flow, but that's a great sign for reaching some kind of threshold where we, you know, would be collectively safer. Also, as of this week, water utility workers were added to the eligible categories under phase 1B. You know, of course, many of us were checking yesterday to see availability. And since each county has some level of administrative involvement in each provider, it seems like it's going to take a few days for all of them to have that filter through their online enrollment systems. But I know anecdotally of at least one individual who resides in Ventura County who was able to schedule their first shot. And I assume LA County won't be too far behind as well. So we're happy with that development. I think that will put some of our staff in with the ability to get a vaccine and further help protect themselves, their families, and their coworkers. We have a virtual all staff meeting next week on the 24th. So sort of the other bookend of this 1 year anniversary, and we'll definitely be taking an opportunity to thank the staff, each and every one of them, for their efforts to get through this year. Obviously, we're not completely out of it yet. It's going to take some time, but certainly, and we want to make sure spring fever doesn't take hold and we start doing, you know, too many silly things. But it's great to feel a little bit of optimism. And it will bring questions about what does the new normal look like and what does the transition back to that look like. So not questions I'm placing before the board tonight, but questions that we no doubt will wrestle with in terms of exactly when and how to transition safely to removing some of the precautions, and also how we want to deploy some of the productivity enhancements that we've had to use in this time period. You know, for example, DocuSign has really shown us how much electronic paper flow can streamline a process. And that's also part of our new accounting system that's going to be rolled out here in a few more months. Not DocuSign, but the idea of more electronic paper flow. The other big one will be, what do we do with remote work? And is that going to be an ongoing option for some? And will it be a 1 day a week, 2 day a week? Not at all, case by case. We'll have to kind of wade through that, as well as many other employers and agencies, I'm sure. And of course, these kinds of electronic meetings, they certainly have their pro and con. You can get Zoom fatigue, sitting in the same chair, staring at the same screen on about your seventh or eighth meeting. But on the other hand, they've been, and sometimes been very helpful to get, you know, two or three consultants physically in one virtual place, not physically, virtually in one place, when we're talking about our PFAS projects. And we have a standing meeting every other Friday, you know, where we kind of go through all of the projects, and we can have the consultants virtually come and go on each project. And that's very efficient in terms of the use of their time and for everyone to pool their thoughts and input in you know, one moment in time. So I think there's going to be some role for virtual meetings going forward as a productivity enhancer. But of course, the in-person is going to be important for further, you know, cementing and maintenance of the human relationship side of what we all do in each of our jobs. So anyway, a little soapbox there, but nice to be thinking about that a little bit while we're still trying to not lose focus and stay on our game here while the rest of it works itself out, hopefully. So, and of course, there are a few bogeys on the horizon. We, you know, I'm sure we're all reading about variants and wondering whether or what will happen with those. But I will say, here's to science and sore arms as part of our collective future strategy. And that will conclude my report for tonight.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate the report. Vice President Mortensen, you had your hand raised.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate the rundown. I was just curious if you could share with us who on staff was responsible for the successful short notice CSDA grant application. So I could extend my thanks to them personally and recognize them for earning their keep.
I would if I could, but I am always cautious about leaving someone out. I know some of the principal people that were involved, but I would be remiss to throw those names out and then leave out others who were also involved behind the scenes. So happy to do that at a future meeting, or perhaps when we celebrate the installation of the unit, we could also do that.
Well, sincere thanks to the anonymous group of hard workers behind the scenes.
Some of whom you may know.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Vice President Gladbach, do you have a question?
Yes, comment. First of all, I concur with Dan in commending those that really stepped up to the plate another time to do yeoman's work. Matt, I really appreciate your update on everything you've just reported. Is everybody back to work that had COVID-19, and are there any lasting effects from those that had it?
I can say in general, most everybody is back, but I, for HIPAA reasons, I probably should stop there. But I would say that we're very hopeful everyone will eventually be back in good form.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions from the board? Seeing none, I just would like to give a shout out to Chris Perez and his team and all the administrative team for making these virtual platforms work so well. We've come an awful long way over the year. And yes, there is Zoom fatigue. There's no doubt about that. But they've gone over and beyond to make it easy on the staff who have to attend these virtual meetings. And sometimes we don't think of that when we go through this. And we log on and everything works perfectly. And seems to be working better than ever. So with that, I'd like to thank the IT staff, April, and all the other administrators that have to operate under these conditions and make sure that we can all participate and the public can participate. All right, with that, I would ask for public comment on Mr. Stone's manager's report. And I do not see any hands raised. So with that, we can move on to the next item, which is item 9, committee meeting recap reports for informational purposes only. There's one meeting on the agenda, which is the Engineering and Operations Committee. Are there any questions on that meeting from the board? I do not see any questions, so I would ask for public comment. Are there any members of the public who would like to comment on item 9? Seeing none, we can move on to item 10, which happens to be the president's report. So I have a few items to report on tonight. The Urban Water Management Plan workshop will be on March 22nd. I think you all received email notification of that and perhaps social media notification of that. The 2021 Spring Economic Outlook webinar is on March 26th. There will be a special board meeting on April 26th as well for the Water Shortage Contingency Plan and Ordinance Public Hearing and Adoption. The AQUA 2021 Virtual Spring Conference will be on May 12th through May 13th. There will be a special board meeting on May 27th for public hearing and adoption of the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. And lastly, there's a possible special board meeting for June 14th. And that concludes my president's report, item 11, AB 12. So I've asked any members of the public who would like to comment on the report. Hopefully there'll be no hands raised. I do not see any hands raised. So we can move on to item 11, AB 1234 reports. You have some listed in your packet, I believe, and some provided in your packet. Are there any other members of the board who would like to make an AB 1234 report tonight? Director Cooper, I see your unvirtual hand.
Just a quick one. I attended the, write it down here, the AQUA Legislative Symposium on the 11th. One item that was really of interest is in discussing water shutoffs some legislation that's in SB 223 for low income assistance. In some Central Valley really has a problem with this, but there are some significant issues in getting this through. So it's right now AQUA is opposing it unless amended, but it's going to be a tough issue for all the water agencies, and who pays for it and how does it deal with the 218 process.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Any other AB 1234 reports? Seeing none, are there any members of the public who would like to comment on item 11? I do not see any hand raised. So with that, we can move to item 12, director reports. Are there any director reports tonight from members of the board? I do not see any. Director Armitage, you have your hand raised.
Thank you. Proceed. Thanks. I just wanted to share that I had a group of students from Valencia High School reach out to me about a week and a half ago, or maybe a couple of weeks now, to ask for information to help them with a project that they're working on as part of a Nanovation competition hosted by UCLA. And their project is related to water quality and microplastics, and they have been chosen as finalists. So they were able to connect with Mike Alvord and Rafael Polito to get their questions answered related to water treatment. And so I just wanted to extend a thank you to the both of them again for taking the time to speak to some of our local students. I think it was a really nice community connection, and I wish them luck in their competition. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Any other director reports tonight? Any member of the public would like to comment? April, do you see any hands raised?
No, it does not appear so.
Thank you. We can move on to item 13, closed session. We will have a closed session tonight for the two items that are listed in your agenda. We will now be going to closed session. The public may stay on the Zoom webinar. Board members and appropriate staff will need to disconnect from the Zoom webinar and reconnect to the Teams meeting that was given to you by email from April, I believe. And with that, there does not require any board action to go to closed session. So with that, we are going to exit the Zoom meeting, those who will be participating in the closed session. And we will see you in closed session. Thank you.